Denne udsendelse er produceret af Mediano Media og lavet i samarbejde med Old Irish Pop og Audi. Og som altid, når vi snakker dansk fodbold, Arbejdernes Landsbank. God fornøjelse.
Du har trykket afspil på den nyeste episode af Det Taktiske Værksted. Mit navn er Rasmus Monnerup, og jeg er vært og redaktør på Det Taktiske Værksted. Det er formatet, hvor vi for alvor kan nørde trænerfaget, og i dag er det OB's cheftræner, Mati Cifuentes, som er gæst. Eller det er vel egentlig mig, der er gæst. Vi sidder nemlig her på OB's træningsanlæg i Aalborg. Vi kan lave disse udsendelser, fordi vi har partnere, der hjælper os og gør det muligt for mig at tage til Aalborg som i dag. Det er Arbejdernes Landsbank, som er Medianos hovedpartner og partner på alt indhold om dansk fodbold. Så er der Audi, der er vores bilpartner, når vi som i dag tager på tur. Og endelig så er der Old Irish Pop, som også er med som partner. Old Irish Pop er egentlig partner på de her klubture, hvor vi besøger en klub og laver 4-5 udsendelser. Men sådan en har vi lavet på OB. Men for at markere samarbejdet, er de alligevel med på denne udsendelse i Det Taktiske Værksted. Der ligger i øvrigt en Old Irish Pop i Jomfru Anegade, hvor man altså både kan se Champions League, Premier League og landskampe. Dagens gæst er dog hverken Champions League eller Premier League træner endnu, men det kan han jo stadigvæk nu. Det er som nævnt OB's cheftræner, Mati Cifuentes. Mati, tak fordi du har lyst til at være med her hos Mediano. Skal vi tage snakken på dansk eller på engelsk?
Vi kan prøve at dansk, men min dansk er dårlig. So, please, English.
Jeg synes egentlig, den er god, men okay. That was the answer I expected, so let's do it in English then. And let's start with the language. I just read you're fluent in Spanish, of course, English and Italian. And you also speak and understand French and Norwegian and a little bit Danish. The story about that, when we start, if we start with the Italian, why do you speak Italian?
First of all, because I would say that I'm from Barcelona and we speak Catalan there. Mm-hmm. So actually, I speak as well Catalan. And perhaps Italian is a little bit mixed, not mixed, but there are a lot of common words with Catalan, with the Spanish. So in some ways, not a difficult language for a Catalan guy to learn. And in that sense as well, from when I was a kid, Italian football was like big, the Serie A and so on. And I really like Italian football, so I remember I was a kid and my father used to buy La Gazzetta dello Sport. And then from that I start to learn, I'm happy to say that I can manage decently. I'm not saying that I'm master in Italian, but I have a good conversation level.
Impressive. Do you have anything concerned about the language? When you came to Norway, you didn't speak the language, and now in Denmark you can understand some words in Danish. But how do you see that as a coach? How important is it to be able to speak the native language?
It's very important, actually. I would say that first I spent as well 1.5 years in Sweden. So actually my challenge was that when I started to learn some Swedish, then I moved to Norway. And then, of course, there are many similarities, but as well the accent, and in Norway as well, the East Coast people speaks different accent language is almost for me than in the West and so on. So I would say that I managed to have a good understanding of Norwegian, and now I'm coming to Denmark, and especially when it comes to the speaking is more challenging for me. But I can read and I can understand some of it, but it's important, and I think as well it's a power of trying to show respect to the country, to the club where you are, that I'm sorry that I cannot manage even more now, but definitely it's a target I have to learn. I always think that it's good to learn languages. It's better to have a fluent communication with the players. And even though we have now a lot of foreign players, so we need to use in some way English during the sessions, I'm looking forward to have these small conversations or these spaces where I can use Danish.
The language can also be an advantage when you have so many languages that you can speak. Sometimes in Denmark we have players that come from South America, and then their English ain't always that good. That can also be an advantage for you, I guess.
It is in some way, because for instance with Pedro, he's from Portugal as well. Portuguese in some way is quite similar to Spanish, so we managed to have conversations. I speak in Spanish, he speaks in kind of Portuguese Spanish as well, so it can help. But definitely I think that one of the advantages in Scandinavia is that you guys are so good in English. And in some way for people that like me that we're coming from abroad, it's easy just to use English. But that's not an excuse. I still push the guys, of course, first to manage with English. The ones like Pedro, like Rufo, like Makarić, the first step, of course, is to manage the English. But in the long term, I think I always ask them to try with Danish, because it's as well, as I said before, for me, it's a way to show respect as well to the country and the culture you are in.
Today we're going to talk about OB and your philosophy as a coach. But first, can you tell the listeners of this pod about your background in football?
Yeah, I was a regular kid playing football since I was 7-8 years old. And then I managed to play in my hometown team until I was 21. I got some injuries, but someday I was still playing. And then I got a call from a sporting director of, I would say, the third club in Catalonia historically, that it's called Sabadell. And then he was a former captain in first division in La Liga, and I had a lot of respect, so I was very happy when he called me, because I thought that they wanted to sign me as a player. And then he told me that I was playing with his son in my team, and then he told me that he knew me, he has been watching me playing and how I was in the pitch, and he thought that I could be a good coach. And it came from a sudden. I didn't expect that. So, of course, I had my plans to play until I was, I don't know, 35, 34, whatever. And then I had a mind to be coach one day, definitely. But then it came like this. They offered me the under-19 position as a head coach in a good club. And I thought, okay, why not? And then I start. In the beginning, first years, I tried to combine both playing and coaching. But at some moment, I could see easily that perhaps my future was more in that side of the pitch than not in the pitch. And then I focus everything into coaching. I really love it from day one. And that's how I started. Then I managed to be at academy level for some years in Barcelona, in Spain. And then I got my first job as a head coach in professional football when I was 30 years old. Was the youngest in third division in Spain. Then I promoted to second division. And then I went to Sweden. From Sweden to Norway, and now I'm Denmark. So it's been a kind of intense journey.
And how did you end up in Sweden?
Yeah, I had the desire to prove myself abroad, because I was already living for some months, first in Netherlands and then in UK, especially to improve my English, but as well to learn a little bit about football. So I was in Ajax learning how they were doing, and then I went to England.
Was Millwall.
Millwall. Yeah. So actually it was more like a study trip in some way. And then I really felt like, okay, this is nice to be challenged abroad, to be a little bit out of your comfort zone. I had this desire to prove myself. And then it came some opportunities, I would say, in some exotic markets. Let's call it like this, leagues in Asia, in America and so on. But I was very eager to stay in Europe. And especially if it could be like an organized league, structure, a country. And then it came the opportunity to go to Sweden, to a big club like OIK. And I was very happy about it. So that's true. In the beginning, I was not a coach. I started like kind of head of methodology, head of coaches. I don't know how you call it here. And it was a very nice step for me. I learned a lot. It was the first time I was coaching abroad. And it was a very good opportunity. I enjoyed it a lot as a city, as a club. And then it came the possibility to be head coach. The club knew that in some way I was looking forward to be again a head coach. And I knew that it was not easy in a club like OIK. And then it came the opportunity to go to Sandefjord. I really liked the project, the club, the city. And then it was a risky one in some way, because it was a challenge from the beginning.
Yeah.
But it was a very nice experience as well that I enjoy a lot.
You came to Denmark from Norway, as you were just saying. If you should point out the biggest difference between Danish football and Norwegian football, what would that be?
I definitely think that, first of all, of course, the league structure is different. In Eliteserien, there are 16 teams, but in Superliga, there are 12, and this is structure of the playoffs. But still, I think And my feeling is that those 12 teams have, let's say, a more different approach on how to play than perhaps in Norway, where there are many teams that are in some way playing quite similar style. There are these 4-3-3. In Norway is very typical with what they call these interlopers, the offensive midfielders that they are more like runners and they attack spaces. It's quite of a pattern, I would say. So I don't know if it's 60-70% of the teams are usually playing on that way. And then of course the players are different. Every coach has a different changes and small variations. But instead here you can see, I don't know, Midtjylland has an approach. Then you have perhaps Nordjylland that is extreme on what they try to do. And then you have Ranas or Horsens that they are very extreme on the way they want to play. So I think that that gives a big differences in terms of how the teams are playing, and that makes it interesting. And then the second, perhaps biggest difference that I found out, especially when I arrived, is that the pitches.
Yeah.
The pitches. In Norway, there are many of kunstgras, of artificial grass. Yeah. But in Denmark, not. And in winter, especially, it's a bit challenging because I think this is a at least an individual wish that the clubs, I think they have the resources and the size of the clubs and how strong is the league, I think the pitches could be better in winter. So I understand the challenges of the weather because that's how it is, but still I think that there is some room to improve.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been coaching in the second tier, and I can tell you the pitches there, they are even worse in the Superliga. So
I can imagine.
It's an issue, there's no doubt about that. If you say the difference between Scandinavian football and Spanish football, I guess there's a lot of difference, but what would you say are the biggest difference?
Then, of course, it's about perhaps the kind of player. I would say that here in the Scandinavian leagues, the approach to the game usually is more physical.
Yeah.
There are more duels. Perhaps the games are a little bit more open from a tactical point of view. There are more spaces in between lines. While in Spain, it's more about the detail. It's more about the technique. Perhaps the games we used to say in Spain that are quite open until someone scores. And then it's not that easy because usually the teams, perhaps both from a tactical point of view, but as well from a cynical point of view, they can manage either through possession, either through just defending without the ball. But still here, I think it's a bit the opposite. Sometimes the games are a bit tight and then suddenly there is a goal and it kind of explodes. So the games become more open, there are more spaces, more eagerness to try to score the goal or to, you know. So this is one of the differences. And then as well in terms of training, I have a feeling that the culture is different. But I experienced that already in Scandinavia. I think that the training culture was different in Norway than in Denmark, perhaps in Sweden
as well. In which way?
I would say that in Sweden, for instance, I think that the but that was my experience in OIK, for instance. But the team was more eager to work into very individual situations or very small, what I call fractals, like in almost very small pieces of the game. But instead, in Denmark, I think that the approach is sometimes a little bit more general, where it comes more about the intensity, about strong feeling, about building the confidence of the group through more emotional, in some way. So I think that affects a little bit the culture of training, where it's more about the runs, the speed, the pace on the game, than not perhaps this individual approach about, okay, what is the body shape or what it should be the position in this specific situation or what is the best solution if you get a 2v1 in the side or in the central areas, things like this. But of course, that's my experience based on three single clubs. I cannot say that this is a pattern in the whole country.
What surprised you the most when you came to Denmark and Danish football in general?
I would say perhaps how emotional are the players and the game by itself. Because, I have the feeling or have the thought that in Southern Europe we are more emotional and more like... But instead I have the feeling that Danish players and Danish football is very affected by, I don't know, the impact of the supporters, the impact of how a team is doing in the last games. Then it's quite easy to grow on confidence or the opposite. And then in the games as well. It's like, okay, if one team is pushing and creating some chances or scoring goals, I think it's quite easy to see how a team drops a bit or feels a little bit like smaller inside the pitch, and the opposite. And I think that this is something that, for instance, we in OBE were trying to work with, what we call this resilience. Sometimes during a game you have periods where the opponent is growing, and we always talk about the momentum. Okay, when you have the momentum, it's time to punish. Hopefully you can score goals. But if it's the opposite, the opponent can have some kind of momentum through a game because it's almost impossible to be dominant for 95 minutes.
Yeah.
Then I think that the bottom level can be higher. If it's very affected by emotions, then it's more difficult to control. And that was my impression in the beginning, that the games were quite emotional.
Do you see that as a good thing, that it can be emotional? Because I think it can also be a good thing that players get emotional and then maybe can perform better. But obvious, it can also be a bad thing because they can't remember the game plan.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think that you just mentioned the point. Perhaps a little bit under stress is not a good thing, because then in some way you can lose the patterns, you can lose the... not only the game plan, but what are the behaviors, what the game is needing and at that moment of the game. But when things are going well, then of course an advantage, because everybody feels like Superman. Everybody can score, everybody can make the next goal chance, and that's obviously strength. So for me, it's always a balance. Try to improve the negative part of it and make the positive part of it grow.
How do you work with that in the... both in training, and I think it's also a mental thing.
In the pitch, we try to recreate situations. So we try, for instance, let's say that we want to work in this bottom level. It easily can be a situation where we are putting a team on more pressure because they have less numbers from a number of players' point of view, I mean. Because they need to, perhaps I'm referring, tougher against them because perhaps they start the game losing 2-0, things like this. So we try to recreate both from a tactical point of view, but as well mentally, and then mentally through the talks individually and with the group, and in the trainings recreate some stressful situations. So they need to, okay, you have now 5 minutes to come back. You are losing 1-0 and that's it. So we try to do this in different ways.
The 28th of December, it was announced that OB had appointed you as a head coach. It was halfway through the season at that point. What did it mean in terms of implementing your style of play when you came here halfway through the season?
Actually, it was the third time that I was taking over a team in the middle of the season, and I knew about the challenges. The first time in Spain, I managed really well. Actually, we ended very good, and it was about avoiding relegation. We did, and we finished the season very strong way. In the second one, it was in Norway, in Sandefjord. I think that was a bigger challenge because I took over, I think it was the game week 14. We had only 5 points, so we had to make almost a Champions League record of points to avoid relegation. We couldn't manage, but that's true that the team didn't lose so many games. In the last 15, 16 games, I think we lost 4 games, something like this. So it was good, but still we didn't manage. I didn't manage. But then because of those experiences, I was sure that it could be a good moment to do it. Of course, I know that there are challenges, because when you come in the middle of the season, and especially being the third head coach, this is... Yep. Usually it's not a good sign. That's how it is. When you check all the teams around the world that have 3 coaches in one season, it's always a challenging season. So in that sense, we knew as a club that perhaps the beginning would be in some way challenging, especially as well because my way of training, my way of coaching perhaps requires some time. And that's something that as well that I experienced. In Sandefjord, it took 5 games before we won the first game. In Barcelona at that time, I think it took, 3-4 games before we won the first one. And in Denmark, it took 7. So it was quite a lot. But we knew that. And I think that we agreed that the first 6 months, we should take it instead of putting a lot of pressure on big goals. We know that OBE is a big club. We know that we need to be ambitious. But in some way as well, we understood that it was time to build, to become, and try to be stronger this season. And in some way, time is giving us the right answers. But I'm pretty aware that the beginning was not easy, and this is because of many factors. But we learned from that.
Was it a possibility to maybe start at the beginning of this season we're entering at now, or was it just I'm gonna take this challenge and then I have to prove myself?
I think it was both target from my side and as well from the club to get a coach already in January.
Yeah.
And I was eager to start the sooner the better. So as long as we were quite clear into understanding that perhaps the first months would be a challenge in terms of, okay, how much we could change, how much we wanted to change, and how much time it takes to implement a new way of playing, a new way of training, and at the end what I call a new culture, because it's not when a new coach comes in, it comes with a lot of feedback, with a lot of new way of doing things. Yeah. And in that sense, for me, it's very important the people who has been in the club, like Rasmus Wurz, that is a legend in the club, and others, Paul Bush, the goalkeeper coach, who has been as well here, like 15, 16 years here. So all the people in the club, that is helping me a lot to understand in some way what is the culture in the club, to understand every day how things have been done. And then it's my job to analyze if those things are helping us to get closer to win games or not. And as well, my approach is always based into performance. So I really want to win. I hate to lose. And then I try to do everything I can, move the culture, move everything is needed to try to win the next game.
When I look at OB now, you have a very clear way of playing. That wasn't always the case last season when you first came here. What did you learn? You were just talking about some of the things, but the first 6 months in the Super League, what did you learn?
No, I learned a lot. As I said before, for instance, from the league perspective, I learned that the pitches were even worse than I expected, than I watched by the TV. I learned that the physical part of the game, it's quite important if you are not very dominant in the way you want to play, because then the games, as I said before, becomes a little bit more unstructured, and then it becomes more like the 1v1, like the dual situation. And then something that we knew already, that it was when a team like OB, big expectations, big club, is struggling a bit on chasing the results, and then the pressure, then the, in some way, the mental part, these emotions that I was talking, are bigger on the players. So I remember, for instance, our first win against Sonderisk at home. We won on a penalty. I think it was close to minute 90 with Ivar, and then Jakob made a fantastic save in minute 93 or 94. I think we played a really bad game. I think we were terrible. And you could see, you could feel the tension on the players. And that's because, okay, a new coach is coming in. I'm not a top international football player. I'm not Zinedine Zidane. So, okay, who is this young, quite young coach coming from a small club in Norway? Okay, this is not working. First games, we are not winning. The friendly games, we were not winning either. So that's normal. That's normal. And then it was some kind of pressure, of doubt, of question marks that at the end, on my experience, is you can only get the answers through time, showing them that you're here to help the players, that you are that you are capable to manage this club, and that through time, I always trust myself that we could make it. And in that sense, I learned that it took time to implement the ideas we had, and that's why probably you can feel like perhaps the performances were a bit up and down.
Yeah.
But I think it's natural in all the clubs when there is a change, that especially in moments during a game or during a season that it's more stressful, the players, then it's not that easy to do what you train. It takes time, and then when it's stressful, it kind of forget these behaviors, these patterns, this tactical approach to the game. So then it takes time until the things that you train, the approach to the game, it's deeper into them. And then even if it's a stressful situation, they will keep on acting on what they are doing. And that's part of the training process that every coach has experienced. There's nothing new for us coaches. But I understand that sometimes from outside, it's easy to ask, okay, why this team can, as we did last season, why we could win 4-0 against Lyngby, playing fantastic football.
Yeah, it was a good game.
I think that one was an example of a good game.
Yeah.
But instead, we could be not very good the week after.
Yeah.
One of the challenges and one of the targets was to be stable, was to reach a good level of performance week after week. And I hope, I would like to think that this is what we are achieving this beginning of this season.
And in addition to that, and these thoughts you have when you first came here, about, you have a philosophy as a coach, And you come to a new country, you come to a big club, a lot of expectations. You have this style of play that you want to implement, but the pitches aren't that good. And can you tell us a little about what were you thinking during that period about, I have a style of play, but I also have to look into the poor pitches, and I have to look into a team that had two other coaches in the same season and so on.
I think it's always a balance.
Yeah.
Because probably all football coaches around the world, we have always like a perfect football way of playing. But then the reality is that you need to adapt as well and try to get the best of the players you have. So I think it's almost a stupid, no coach in the world will do it. If you have a defender that is so bad on the build-up, you will not ask him to assume responsibility on the build-up, or at least you will not push him into limit situations. So it's always about adapting. Or if you have a striker that is not good into, I don't know, finishing crossings, it makes no sense to ask him to put him all the time on those situations. So I think it's always about some part of adaptability and some part as well to look into the longer term. And this is, I think, the work that all of us we are doing. So when I arrived, for me it was, first of all, I think that the team, and I said that before sometimes, the team had a fantastic approach into the pressing game. I think that Jaco Fries especially did a fantastic work in that sense. Yeah. So sometimes you have to convince the players that to press, the physical effort that is required to press high, sometimes you need to convince them. But in that sense, the job was done. I arrived here and the players were so eager to work hard. And that's very good. But then, on my eyes, we could improve some other parts of the game, especially on the ball, especially when it comes about taking the lead through the possession, how to attack lower blocks, how to be more dominant through an offensive style, not be that reactive but more proactive. And these were the parts that we tried to develop. So in that sense, it was about adjusting all the time, week by week, until you find a balance that makes you perform and makes the players to feel comfortable on what we are doing without compromising the long-term, the identity. So when I look back and we analyze a lot together with my team, with the staff, in these 9 months, I think that you can see a clear progression on what we are trying to do. And I would say that from day one, you could see some principles of what we are doing now. But of course, it was not that clear as it is now. Some of them were not that stable as it is now. But that's, as I said before, that's football. I think that you will see the same with EPSECO, for instance, with Mittiller now with the new head coach. I think that it's about time that the teams get the behaviors and the stability during a game and week by week that all of us we want.
When you first arrived here, there was a lot of talk about Cruyff. And you, I think you had mentioned in an interview in Norway that you were inspired by Johan Cruyff. And I think all of us coaches are inspired by Cruyff and the way of playing. But it was, in Denmark, it was a lot about, oh, now here comes the Spanish guy. He wants to play tiki-taka in Denmark. And the pitches are not to play tiki-taka and so on. But if you should say the philosophy as a coach, would you rather have a team that has a very clear expression, or do you see maybe your philosophy is to have a team that can change the expression from match to match?
I think that it's important to have a very strong identity. That's for me very clear. And in that sense, I know that it was all these talks about Cruyff and so on. I never say that I expected Obe to play like Barcelona. I never said that I'm the new Johan Cruyff. I don't know how many things it has been said. I don't care either. But the reality is that I'm influenced by the philosophy of Johan Cruyff. Yeah. That's why I went to Amsterdam. That's why I'm from Barcelona. And I'm very happy to be influenced by that. So in that sense, I would love if one day one of my teams can play as good football as one of the top teams that are playing on this philosophy, that actually it's called positional play. It's nothing new. There are many principles that we apply, and then there are some others that we don't because of the kind of players or because what I think it makes us to perform. But when you look at from a tactical perspective, from the understanding of the game point of view, I think when you look this pattern that I was talking before about these 9 months, you can see clearly that we have some clear patterns, targets that are basically to understand the game from a positional point of view, from understanding that if you have the right position in the pitch, then it will help you to the rest, both to defend, to attack, to have a good defensive transition, and so on. So in that sense, I'm very calm about what I said and where in the process we are. And definitely I think that is a strength to have the capacity to adapt to the different moments of the game. So for instance, I'm very proud, and I'm give all the credit to the guys how good we can be sometimes in low block now when we are defending close to the box, which actually is a principle that I don't like it. So if I could choose, I would like to defend always in the midline with the central defenders 60 meters away from my goalkeeper. Yeah. But the reality is that sometimes the other team as well risk more, they push more, they have momentums. And then the fact that we can be good on those situations, it's just a strength. So keeping the identity, but having the capacity to adapt small adaptations game to game and small adaptations during the game, I cannot see how it can be a weakness.
Let's talk a little about style of play. If you, if I ask you to describe the style of play with the ball in three words, what would that be?
Position, possession, and if you want, pace. So three P's. position, because that's the main thing. You don't need to be the fastest one, the best one in the pitch to play good if you have the good position, because then you will be always at the right time and the right space. So then everything is much easier. Possession, because it's a tool to move the opponent. It's a tool to create the gaps, to create the spaces through the defensive lines, through the defensive structure of the opponent. And pace, basically on the ball, because sometimes it's important. Pace on the ball involves as well for me to stop sometimes, to have this pause if you want, yeah. Because football cannot be played on my eyes at one speed. Especially when you attack, sometimes it's time to attract, for instance, so you need to drive a little bit slow to attract one player, because that means that if you attract a defensive player, then you're creating a Freeman somewhere in the pitch. So this pace, and sometimes it's the opposite, you need to play really fast to open the gaps or to really move the opponent. So these three pieces perhaps are the way I will describe how I think when it comes to attack.
What is the thing that impressed me the most when it comes to Spanish football, or maybe also Italian football, is the ability to be able to play very slowly and then just like that, very, very fast. Is that something you see Danish teams and maybe Danish players struggle a little bit with the ability to do that? I have an expression that it always is a very, very high-paced game in Denmark, mm-hmm. most of the games.
Mm-hmm. Agree. I think that I don't have the full explanation of it. Mm. I need to say that Italian football, perhaps lately.
Yeah.
Because they are changing a bit. But I would say that in Spain, for instance, we learned a lot from South American. We had a lot of South American players in the history. And I think that especially Argentinian players, Brazilian players, have been always good into change the tempo.
Yeah.
Sometimes very slow, it looks slow, but then suddenly change the rhythm. And that what makes football in some way unexpected, and that's a key to break lines, to break defensive structures. Perhaps in Scandinavia, my feeling is that both the British influence, especially when I was in Sweden, I learned a lot about the 70s, Hodgson and so on, the British influence. And then in Denmark, I have a feeling that the German influence, especially Brøndby, Lazier, so on. I think that the understanding of the game has been a little bit more like this, with high tempo all the time. You can see Bundesliga games are a little bit up and down, and the tempo is much higher than perhaps in Italian football, in Spanish football. So in that sense, I think it's natural that the game is like this, but perhaps it's true. But then you see players like, I don't know, Eriksen or Damsgaard, that they have naturally this capacity to slow down and suddenly accelerate the game. So that's very, very nice to see.
Same question. Style of play against the ball in three words.
Pressing, position again, and perhaps counter-pressing, the way I see as well. I know that it's kind of the same with the pressing, but it's a very important part of my game, because in some way I want to press high. Always, if we can, I prefer to regain the ball close to the goal. That's obvious, and not the other teams. Mourinho has done that with amazing success for many years, regaining the ball lower in the pitch as a tactic to have better bigger spaces to attack. But I prefer to attack smaller spaces because then that means that you're high on the pitch. The position, because once again, if you ask me to defend the whole pitch, I'm very bad. But if you ask me to defend this mirror that it's between you and me, perhaps I can manage. Yeah. So if you have a good position to defend, then you can be much better defender. And then the last one, counter-pressing, because I want to have the shorter defensive moment that I can. So I want to be in possession, I want to regain the ball, to attack again. So if you have a good counter-pressing behavior, a good counter-pressing philosophy, then Jurgen Klopp and the German coaches, they say that he's the best number 10 we can get in the pitch. I'm not sure if I share that 100%, but I definitely see that I want to regain the ball the faster we can. So in that sense, it's a big important part of the defensive moment.
And when it comes to counter-pressing, it also has something to do with the ability to, of course, you're talking about possession and you're talking about positions. Because if you are going to be able to have a good counter-pressing, then you have to have some players who are able to keep the ball so you get closer to the opponents. And then when you lose the ball, you can go into counter-pressing. How important is that for you, the possession?
Very important. Once again, for me, the possession by itself, it makes no sense. So many times when we finish a game with 60% of possession or 48% of possession, for me, I don't care, to be honest. It's not so important. What I care is what do we do on those moments. So the possession for me is a tool. It's just a tool. That's why I said that the position is what is important. Yeah. And then that's true that we speak with the players that once we recover the ball, it's very important to keep the first pass, the first two, three passes, because if you lose after recovering, then it's an up and down game. And then you need perhaps, usually the technical players are not usually the best ones in terms of long efforts and up and down games. Sometimes you can find it. Nowadays, perhaps Paul Pogba is amazing, both physically and technically, but he's not that common. But instead, the technical players that are good usually in small spaces, they are quite good into this quick reaction. But if you ask them to spend a lot of energy up and down, then it's not the same. So in that sense, for me, it's very, very important that we achieve those positions. Because if you are well positioned, when you lose the ball, you can directly have some pressure. But if because of whatever you have three players out of position, then it's very difficult. And then usually the opponent can manage either to progress or take the ball out of this influence area, stress area, as I call it, and then it's not easy to apply this counter-pressing.
There have been some examples in here in Denmark about and maybe some teams that has a very possession philosophy. But also when you watch them play, it's just a little bit boring, to be honest. Mm-hmm. How do you see the line between possession for a purpose, as you were talking about, but also being able to take advantage of that possession?
Once again, and perhaps I'm very repetitive, but the key will be the position.
Yeah.
So sometimes, for instance, there are, and I can recognize what you say. For instance, for us, we try to press quite high. Sometimes it has been perhaps a couple of teams that they have been using a lot of players on the build-up, a lot. And sometimes they manage to be amazing in the first zone of the build-up. Yeah. But in some way, even if I want to regain the ball there, if they are putting a lot of players down there, it's not dangerous.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying that the possession rate sometimes is tricky, because if they have the ball in their own box, okay, of course I want to regain it fast. Of course I want to regain it high. But it's not dangerous if they keep it down there. So for me, it's a balance between how many resources in some way as a team you invest in the phase, and then what you want to do. Because I remember, for instance, the Spanish national team in the last years, before now, Luis Enrique, I think, is doing a good change. Yeah. But it became a little bit possession by possession.
Yeah.
And I understand that sometimes it's a good way to defend. Many times I understand that, okay, you can use the possession just to defend because you have an advantage on the score. And then you decide to not attack, just keep the ball because you have technical players that can do it. Fine for me. But these perhaps topics about the tiki-taka, we don't like it. In Barcelona, we don't like the tiki-taka concept because it's a little bit like this, just possession without purpose. And instead, what do we want? I want my players to be located in certain areas of the pitch depending on how the opponent is organized because it's not always the same positions. There are some areas that are key that usually in 99% of the games we want to achieve, we want to connect. But then if you can manage to connect with those players in those positions, then oh my gosh, you have a lot of possibilities to win the game. Then someday you will miss three goals that are quite clear, and someday you will score them. But the more you achieve those zones, I think that the more chances you get to win that game. And I understand that once again about playing a little bit with the opposition. So it's not just hitting the ball into the box and that's all, because then it's quite flat, quite predictable. But sometimes you need, as we said before, this pause to change the rhythm later, or to go to the left because you want to finish on the right, or to achieve certain zones because you want to attract the pressure to play into another zone. This is a little bit, for me, the purpose of why we're in possession.
We talked about the game against Lyngby last season, maybe the best game you played. I think it was a very, very good performance. You also played Midtjylland this season. And when we're talking about possession, you had the ball a lot in that game, and it was a lot of possession when Jakob Rinne was standing with the ball and trying to find solutions, and Midtjylland were just accepting that. Is that a game that you have learned a lot from?
Definitely. And actually, I think it was a very interesting game for many reasons. The first one, and now we can say that, just before the game, a few hours before the game, we had to change the approach because we had a sick player. I think it was, if I'm not wrong, I think it was Daniel Granli who felt a bit sick. And then we had not only Anders Hajelska, that is doing fantastic, but at that moment was missing still some minutes of playing after 4 or 5 months without playing 90 minutes. So we just took the decision to change the formation, as we like to do in some way, to change sometimes the formation. That's the first thing. Midtjylland, for first time in many months, they changed the formation as well. So that created an interesting pre-game from a tactical point of view. And then as well, I remember that the first 10 minutes, Midtjylland actually tried to press high.
Yeah.
They tried, but then we were very good on the build-up, and then I was thinking, okay, this will work well. Yeah. But then, and that's the strength of the good teams, and they just accepted that we don't care if we're Midtjylland and we can be perhaps the best team in the country, but they accepted that they will be in a lower block, they will wait for the chances, and they let us have, in some way, the ball. I think that we had this game 60% of possession or something like this, but instead we didn't create so much. And that's what I was saying. Then I don't want the possession. Then why? So I think that we are developing into how to manage, how to beat these lower blocks. Midtjylland is very strong, both individually and collectively, no doubt about it. And I think we had as well a bad day. So it was a combination of a lot of things before the game, during the game, and they were good. And sometimes, this is football as well, sometimes you just need to shake hands with the opponent and say congratulations, you have been better, and to the next one. Because it's always a winner and a loser in football.
What's the best game you played this season?
That's a good question. I think, for instance, last game we play against Sundariski, we won 4-0.
Yeah.
And someone might think that it was the best game, but for me, not at all. Not at all. I think that we were good into punishing, into scoring goals, into finishing actions, but collectively I think it was not our best performance. I think Vale away was a very strong, especially the first half. I think we played at really, really high level because we were fantastic into understanding which positions, how we should stay in the pitch. And I think we play at really, really high level in the first half. I think against Brøndby, the first half as well, we were very strong. And then in the second, they were really good on as well the pace they have at the front. Perhaps we misunderstood a little bit how to control the game in the second half. But I think we had periods of good performances. But I'm still thinking that we can have like a stronger game, like 90 minutes. I'm still looking forward to it because I think that we have the players to do it. We have quality in all the lines. And I'm sure that it will come. It will come, this not the perfect game, because in football it's impossible, but this game that we feel, wow, today we play for almost 90 minutes at really high level.
We talked about Cruyff, and I'm not going to ask you about Cruyff anymore, but we all coaches, we are all inspired by different coaches, and we watch a lot of teams and say, hey, wait, maybe we can implement that element in our game and so on. If you should say any Danish coaches, are you inspired by any Danish coaches?
Yeah, of course, I learn every day. I'm very bad with the names, but of course, Casper is doing an amazing job in the national team.
Yeah.
And actually, have the physical coach is a Spanish guy. He's a very good friend of mine, Isma, and we talk a lot about how they are doing things there. And by the way, T-Liga, and congratulations for the classification, because it has been outstanding. I try to have a look on Bo in Mainz. I think he's doing a fantastic job. Yeah. I think, for instance, Viborg is playing amazingly now. When you look at the table, it's for me unbelievable that they have only 11 points, because they are playing at a really, really good level. We met on the preseason, and I told the coach, you will do a very good season. The same with Kent, that is a legend here in Obe. Yeah. I think that he's doing a fantastic job in Silkeborg. Not only the points, but the way they play.
Yeah, the way they play.
I really like it. So I learned from, to be honest, I'm a young coach, even though I have some gray hair. I try to learn.
At least you have hair.
That's it. Okay, that's something. But that was one of the reasons why I moved to Scandinavia as well. I tried to learn in Sweden, I tried to learn in Norway, and I'm learning here. So definitely it's one of the points why I'm here.
And I also guess that Guardiola is also a big inspiration in the way of playing.
Yeah, of course. For me, it's a reference. The way his team plays, it's an inspiration. And of course, what he is achieving as a coach, the number of wins, the way he wins, the way he develops players, for me, it's a reference. But as well, in some way, Jurgen Klopp is.
Yeah.
In some way, a lot of coaches that I admire, what Tuchel has been doing in Chelsea. So definitely, I think that we need to look at the best ones. That's where they are there.
Let's talk about the formation. Before we get to the formation you're using now, I would like to hear a take on formations in general. Some coaches are almost religious when it comes to a certain formation. When you were in Sandefjord, you played the 4-3-3 in different forms, but it was always 4 at the back. Is that your preferred formation?
Yeah, probably it is to play with 4 at the back, but once again, for me, systems are very dynamic.
Yeah.
And I heard one coach that actually now is the system coach in City, who said that actually you can only see the system by itself pure in the kickoff. Then when the ball is moving,
that's a good point.
Then all the players are moving.
Yeah.
And for me, the interesting part of coaching and of in some way football is that how to use a left fullback. And if you want, we were talking about Pep. We can talk, for instance, about how City is using the fullbacks. Yeah. So if Zinchenko is playing, because of his skills, okay, he defends as a left fullback. But when they have the ball, he comes as a number 6. But if he's Mendy has a different kind of strengths. When he's playing, he plays almost like a winger pinning the defensive line. And for me, this is a little bit the path that I like to build with my team. Sometimes, for instance, in Sandefjord, we were playing kind of 4-3-3, but already last season we had a very offensive left fullback, Anton Krag, that now is back in Sweden, in Dejafors. And we use him much higher than the right fullback because we try to build with 3, because I really believe that against many kind of pressures, build up with 3 players and perhaps 1 or 2 midfielders is giving some advantages in terms of angles, in terms of passing, in terms of how to break some kind of pressures. That's why I'm saying that preferred system, perhaps I would say 4-3-3. But I'm very flexible into that. For me, it's about who is the player, who is the right winger. Let's gonna try to use him in the best way. So we have a fantastic player in 1v1. I will try to isolate him full width to get as many 1v1 situations as we can. But if you have, for instance, a player like Kusk that is fantastic in the pocket, or a player like Luka that is fantastic in the pocket, instead of isolate him, they are very good in 1v1 as well. But perhaps we want to have them in the pocket. So all these small variations are the ones that, for me as a coach, we need to work with. The same with, okay, false 9 or not false 9. Okay, if we have Milan Makaric, definitely he's not to play as a false 9 because he's a kind of different striker.
Yeah.
And then it's my job to create an environment, create a team around all this where all the players can give their best level and as a team we can perform.
Can you tell us about your thoughts when you came here when you arrived at OB regarding the formation? Because you started out with playing a kind of a 4-3-3 and then you changed the system. Mm-hmm. What were the thoughts?
The thoughts were, I face in that sense in Norway we had a similar situation. I arrived to Sandefjord, and Sandefjord for the last 2-3 years before I arrived, they were playing with a kind of 3-5-2 with a coach, Lars Boinen, that has been playing that in all his teams, and it was kind of his philosophy to play this 3-5-2. And then according to the way I wanted to play, according to the players, we thought that we could develop more with four at the back. So the first 2-3 games, I think we played with three. Then we play more minutes with four at the back, but many times during a game we were switching to three at the back. Okay. And here the approach was a little bit similar in some way. We knew that the team was finding some stability. At least part of the squad was in some way designed to play with three at the back. Then because of the use of certain players, and basically the reason behind it was to add one extra offensive player in some way, if you want to be very simple in the way we say that. Yeah. We try to go to four at the back, but it was in some way a challenge for some players, because as I said before, when you don't achieve the results immediately, plus you are changing some things, then we decided that perhaps we could develop as well with three at the back. And as I said before, for me it's not crucial the system, but the identity. Yeah. And then when I see now the team, it's true that we are spending more minutes with three at the back, which give us some strengths and some weaknesses, as all the systems in the world.
Yeah.
But then it's about how we do that and when we do that. For instance, against Sonderiske, last game, we start the game with three at the back. We had a very good period, the first 15 minutes. We score 1-0. And then Sonderiske actually start to regain some control of the game. And I would say that until minute 35, they were better than us. The next 20 minutes after we score, we lost gradually some control of the game. And the last 10 minutes, they got cancelled a goal, but they were better than us. So then we switched to 4-3-3. And I think that the switch was that fast. And in some way, perhaps they didn't expect that, that in the second goal, the lender, that is the wingback, is pressing our wingback until that moment, that was Pellesen, but at the moment he was already fullback. So yeah. Bursting was behind the lender. And the central back, he was not aware about that. So then the second goal comes because this change of system, now suddenly we're occupying the space in a different way. Same way of playing, just different way to occupy the spaces.
So three at the back is not something we're going to see OB play the next 3 or 5 years, so on.
I don't know. Oof, I don't know if I will be here in 5 years. As a head coach, you never know where you will be in 2 months. But I will say that this is not that any target that I have or something. We will develop, and then we'll see. We're going to keep the three at the back for the next at least year and a half that I'm under contract, or we're going to change, or we're going to have this flexibility I spoke about. Yeah. We'll see.
Can you tell us about the different roles in the team? So if we talk about the formation, let's just talk about the 3-4-3, the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I've been very, very impressed with the way you're using René, especially when you're in possession. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little about the role of the goalkeeper in your philosophy?
First of all, thank you that you're impressed, but it's because I have amazing keepers in the squad, because both René and Hansi are so good in the offensive game, in their capacity to build up, to help the team in that phase. And we are just trying once again to use their strengths. So that's true that according to the way I like to play, this kind of keeper is important. Yeah. But as well, they are giving us an edge because they are so good. So in that sense, there is something very clear. You play 11 versus 11, and the keeper is not marking anyone. So if you use your keeper, then you have a plus one in the pitch. That's the main principle. Yeah. Then from that, we try to understand that there are moments where the keeper is just a support, and there are moments where the keeper can be the one provoking the Freeman, provoking, being the one who breaks the lines. And that's what we try to use. We train a lot on that because as well, I think that in some way, is a kind of risk that I like, that I think it's worth. But in the beginning, for some players and for some teams, it can be kind of a challenge because you are asking them to have the ball inside the box, which not many players are comfortable with. Until you train enough where they can see that this is an edge, that there is a purpose, not to look fancy, but there is a purpose about attracting the pressure so you can break lines and attack bigger spaces. There are many reasons. You create as well some kind of frustration emotionally to a team that tries to press high and cannot succeed. there are a lot of reasons why we do that. But we use the keeper on this offensive phase in a way that he's an extra outfield player. So he helps us into creating passing lines. He supports when the central back or the sweeper has the ball. So he creates a new passing line. And we know that we can use him to switch the game side to side, or we can use him as well to break lines.
Sometimes when you play with three at the back, the central of the three guys at the back, sometimes the lines from the goalkeeper to the midfield players, he's kind of standing in that line. How do you solve that problem? If you see it as a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. So it depends once again about the opposition as well. Yeah. But for instance, many days we are playing with Talanda, who is right-footed, as a this kind of central back. And then we play with Jacob Brine as a keeper that is left-footed. Yeah. So actually what we try to do is Talanda can shift a little bit to the right, and then Jacob shift a little bit to the left. But depending on what kind of pressure, it can be good that Talanda stays inside, because then Jacob can use the channels. If we spread out the other two central backs, he has the quality to use. Yeah. So that, these are the things that during every week we try to work. The main thing, again, is implement this kind of feeling that, okay, they are comfortable doing this. Yeah. They are comfortable about keeping the ball in this zone of the pitch. They know the principles, because there are football principles behind that. It's what we call the ball tempo. It's what we call the body shape. It's what we call the right angles. It's a lot of principles about this. And then when we achieve this level of understanding, we can add the small details. Okay, we know that against these guys, probably the Freeman will be, I don't know, in the pockets. Or probably the Freeman will be the wing back. So we try to analyze this and give them the tools, because at the end, as we said before, in a game, during a game, things can change. So that's why it's so important to have good players, in that case, good keepers, that they can understand, they can interpret it. And then I have an amazing team as well in the halftime, the scouting department or the analyst guys. They show clips to the keepers. So, hey guys, just so you know, the Freeman is, as we spoke during the week, these guys, or they are making these small adaptations so we can go a little bit deeper, whatever is the space.
And then the three central defenders, the roles, what do you want them to do when you're in possession and when you're working against the ball?
I think one of the advantages to play with three at the back is that gives usually good stability for the build-up. Yep. So there are a lot of easy passing lines in some way, which it can be good to have good pace on the ball. But actually, I like that the central backs on the sides are quite aggressive. So they are mainly the ones who most of the times can break lines. But when you face an opposition that, for instance, they know that, and this is starting to happen, that they lock, especially those guys, having a kind of pressure where they put more impact on them, then the guy, the central back, is the one who, having the right support in the central channel, he can be the one breaking the lines. Mm. So, for instance, for me, and I guess I will talk now about the midfielders, but when this central back has the ball, many times I don't ask them to be the one breaking lines. But if the opposition is being more aggressive, putting more pressure in our lateral central backs, then it's obvious that there will be more space either on the central areas or directly on the wing backs. So then he needs to understand this picture, and then how much the keeper, once again everything is related, how much the keeper can help on that. So then we can use the keeper to helping him, and then to open a new passing line, because then it's very difficult for the position to shift and cover all the passing lines. But in possession, I would say that they are the guys that starts all the process that they need to build up, that we like them in a perfect picture. I always say that I think we play our best minutes during seasons, during games, when our central backs are 10-15 meters in front of the midline. Yeah. This is the scenario that I like, because as well defensively, both Daniel Granli, Telanda, Matthias Ross, Anders Helska, they are extremely brave, extremely good into defending big spaces, into defending forward, as I call it. And this is a strength that we are definitely using, because they are good into this. So it's just giving us a new edge. They are not afraid about facing 1v1 situations. Many central backs, you know, that they prefer to play 2 against 1, or okay, the lower and the closer to the box, because they don't need to run behind. But these guys, they are so brave. So they are ready to go forward and to defend in open pitch, which you need some balls to do it, and they do. So in that sense, defensively, I think they are getting better and better into defend forward, into pumping the line, something that we spoke as well when we are in a lower block. Yep. I think we had a bit tendency of stay there instead of just pumping every time. And I think that we are there now. We are already trying to not defend inside the box. Even if we are in a low block, we try to avoid box situations. And if we need to, after the clearance, after the second action, then we pump it again to defend as high as we can all the time. So, and then defensively, of course, it's about covering, it's about the zonal marking, it's about having a good relation, communication in between them, because when you play with three, this can be a core of the team in some way. And I think that all of them, it's a big competition. Elman can play there as well. Pellesen can play there as well. So we have a lot of good players. Prijovic, young guy, that is taking good steps. So we have players that can do the job that we're asking them.
Then let's look at the two wingbacks. Same question.
Wingbacks, I think I admire how they are doing, because in some ways a very demanding position,
yeah,
from a physical, technical point of view, because in other systems where you usually have two players on the sides, on the lateral channels, then you can share responsibilities. But when you play with this system, the wingback in some way is the only one occupying almost all time the full width. And that's actually what we ask them when we are on possession. The first thing is that they need to provide us the width. And in some games, we ask them to provide as well as some kind of depth or not. So some games, we want them deeper, pinning perhaps the opposition fullback.
Depending on the pressure of the
That's
opponents.
It. Yeah. That's it. And where we think it can be the space. Or sometimes we ask them to be lower, because then we attract some player to jump, to step into them, and then we create some space on behind. So we adjust the depth, and they are doing so well in that sense. We ask them to attack, and that's why it's so demanding, because in the build-up sometimes we ask them to be a bit lower, but still when we attack the last phase of the pitch, we want them to fill the box, either to cross, either to make the cutback, the square pass, or to attack the second post. So that's why I'm saying that is a very demanding position, and if we don't succeed, then they need to make transitions that sometimes are very long. Yeah. So I think that Pellesen is playing at really high level, not only with the assists, but the way he's defending, the way he's attacking, contributing on the build-up phase, understanding when he needs to stretch the pitch or not. Fantastic job. I think that Elman, bursting, doing great job as well every time, crossing situations, for instance, in Bromby, bursting right-footed. He's crossing with the left, amazing left-foot cross. So I'm very happy with all of them. And in some way, once again, we try to use their strength. So sometimes we have been using Hannes Bo as well as a left winger, because in some way he's a more offensive profile. Elman, on my eyes, a little bit more fullback profile. But every time he steps into the box, he's so smart. So he can create situations by himself, the 1-2 that he's good at, and so on. So we try to use them in the right moment and the right time. And defensively, they are very important in the press, especially when it comes to high-pressing situations, because many times they are the ones that are stepping into the opposition fullback. And then we shift with the other guys, with the three at the back, and perhaps the opposite wingback as well needs to shift. And when we're in a low block, they are defending as deep, as low as the central backs. So once again, you can see how demanding this position can be. But basically, I would say that they are very important in our way of playing, because they provide us the width that otherwise it's impossible to play without.
On the right side, it has been Pellesen who had played almost every game, I think. Yeah. Actually, he played every game. On the left, you have switched a little. Why is that? Is that a tactical decision, or is it just two players that are very close to each other, and then you look at the training session and say, yeah, well, one week it's Bursting and the other week it's Elman?
Precis. I think it's a mix of both. We try to use, and I think it's natural to use the right moment for players. I think, for instance, Bursting came after the summer break in amazing shape. He had a fantastic preseason. He was a bit unlucky to get a small injury the first two games, I think. But afterwards, he came with a really high level. And in some way, I tried to be as fair as I can. And that's very difficult. And I know that the guys will not be, the players probably are not agree with me, but we try to be very fair with all of them. And if someone is performing at really high level, the next one needs to perform at least at the same level to get his chance. And that's the kind of performance culture that we try to build. Because then I think that you build an environment where everybody push each other, which is good for the team. It's good from individual point of view to develop. And as well, that creates a kind of competition through the season where all the time the bottom level goes higher and higher and higher. And as well, there are some tactical decisions, of course. In some games, we thought that Elman could give us... Elman has some strength, bursting others. And we tried to use those from game to game as well.
Let's look at the three central midfielders. Or how do you define it? Is it two number six and one number 10? Or?
We call it the 6, 8, and 10.
Okay, so 6, 8, and 10.
6, 8, and 10. Three different roles. For us, the number six is the one that usually 99% of times is on the what we call the base of the play. Is I don't like this defensive midfielder way to call it, but in some way this, I don't know, Busquets, Fernandinho, whatever is the player, this role about a guy that is important on the build-up phase on the ball, that is usually not out of the central channels, that mostly is a reference for the rest of the players, that you know that there is always one guy there. And then defensively is the one in some way in front of the central backs that is not having long transitions up and down, that is not in weight areas either, but is more like this guy in front that we know that it can be important for the second ball, that it can be important in terms of covering the pressure, but as well into cover some situations with the central backs. The number eight, it's a little bit a mix of the six and the ten. So the number eight for us, it's a player. For instance, Melde is having a great interpretation this season of this role. A player that can drop to the base in certain situations, in certain games, to attract the pressure or to help in terms of numbers, depending on how many players the opposition put on the pressure to give an extra numerical advantage. But he is very important on the build-up. But as well, he has more freedom to attack the box. He has more freedom to occupy the melon room. He has more freedom to move around the pitch in certain areas, once again, because we don't want two players in the same position, but to occupy and understand this. And defensively, usually a little bit higher on the pitch in terms of pressing, but that if against certain teams, for instance, if you play against inverted triangle with a team that is playing 1-6 and 2-8, then obviously you will shift a little bit this triangle. So instead of playing with two guys in front of my number six, then this eight will drop to defend the two number eights. So this interpretation of this more offensive profile than the six, but defensively assuming some responsibilities, both on the pressure, both in the low block, this is what we call the number eight.
Yeah.
And then the number 10, that is more like, I don't know, in Italy they call it the trequartista, this player that is more used to playing between lines, that probably is better into attacking the box, into creating goal chances, depending on who is it, good on 1v1. We have been using in this position both Luca Prip, that is good on 1v1, good on the last pass, good on attacking the box, with Ivar, that perhaps Ivar Fossum is not that much a 1v1 player, but extremely good on second line runs. So depending on the game, depending on the situation of the team, we use these two, but it can be Rufo, it can be Kuzka as well, could play there, have different players that could play that role. And then defensively, important on the pressing, usually marking number six of the opposition, but sometimes stepping, we have been using Ivar stepping into the central backs because he's an amazing runner, so he can cover two players on press if needed or big spaces in the cover. So, but important player on the pressing system, yes.
But that will also change, I assume, when you play with Makaric, for example. If you play with the two strikers, if we call them strikers, then if it's Luka Prip who's playing, he's kind of drift wide and wants to get some 1v1 situations. But if you play with Makaric, you have a more classic number nine. Mm-hmm. So the role of the number 10, as you were saying with the other roles, is also changing.
Definitely.
Depending on who's playing.
100%, because, and for instance, you have a very clear picture on Brøndby is playing as well 3-5-2.
Yeah.
And you can see how their strikers, the Swedish guy.
Hedlund,
precis. They are so wide, usually. And they are about attacking spaces all the time because that's their strength. And this is a good interpretation on my eyes about how the coaching team is working there. So for me, for instance, if we play with a more target or classic number nine, as is Milan Makaric, then the number 10, of course, can occupy different spaces because this number nine, because of his skills, mostly Milan is pinning the central backs.
Yeah.
His capacity to hold the central backs is important. So that gives some spaces, some room for the number 10 that can occupy. Instead, if we are playing with, let's say we play with Kusk or Luka as a number 9, they will be players that will drop more, they will try to look for the ball, they will, it's different. So they will not pin that much the central backs. But instead, they will drop and create advantages in other, perhaps more in the melon room or in other parts. So that's why it's very easy to be a Monday trainer, but when you are in the pitch, our job is to try to find the best solution every time. Okay, if we play with Ivar as a 10, we know that we can use him very good on this and this. Perhaps we are losing this. Okay, but then if we lose Luka, we are better on that and that. But then the relations. Okay, because if it's Milan or it's Tim or it's Rufo, the number 9, the picture can change a bit. And these are the details that week to week we try to implement, and as well trying to build in the longer term stronger relations.
And the two strikers then. How do you see the different roles of the two strikers? Is it the more classical with the one big guy and a little guy that can run?
In some way, I like the approach that Italian teams had for many years about having two players that can complement each other. Yeah. So that's true that we use a little bit the term of the second striker and the striker. And in that sense, you could see that we have been using as a second striker, Luka Prip, Alex Trajovski, that I didn't mention before, but a great player that will help us a lot. A little bit more like a second number 10, but a little bit higher on the pitch. Perhaps if you want even more freedom in some situations, higher in terms of pressing, working very close to the number 9, perhaps very important on the counters, on defensive transitions, but as well this in some way kind of player that can score goals, that can create 1v1 situations by himself, a player that can attack the space as well. That is something that is very crucial for us to stretch the team, to attack the spaces behind the defensive line, and then that can complement with the number 9. Sometimes it can be good to play with two second strikers, of course, and especially you have players like Kivar, like Rufo, that are very good into the second line runs. It's a very good way to attack as well. So that's why I'm saying that we try to have this clear idea on, okay, we try to implement these long-term relations, but at the same time, have this flexibility, this capacity that at the end comes by understanding the game. And that's in the process where we are now, that we try to help the guys to understand each situation, because each opposition is different. And then some moments of the game, you defend or you attack, against a low block. And some moments of the season of the game, you will attack against a team that is extremely high. Then you need different tools in some way, different ways to attack. And if we can develop a team that is good in all the phases, then of course we'll be a very good team. But this is not easy. But when you look at the top teams, I look, for instance, Chelsea now. Wow, when they are defending in low block, you look at Thiago Silva with 36 years old and he's the boss. It's so difficult for them to concede a goal. But when they press high, they are a machine. They are amazing on how they press. And the same while playing, they can build up with amazing capacity and they can attack against a low block as well with a lot of tools. So I think that's what is about being a strong team, being a team that can manage different game scenarios.
You mentioned Kasper Kusk and the role he could play at number 10. Could he also play one of the two strikers? Or what is his best position? Is it to be a winger that can go inside the pitch? Or how do you see that?
We're using him mostly as a second striker. Yeah. So both in trainings and in games, he's getting most of the minutes in that position. But I'm pretty aware, again, we'll talk about systems in a 4-3-3. Yeah. His favorite position is the right winger because he likes to come in. But I remember last season he played, and I remember to speak with him about it. And when I arrived, we used him as a false nine. Mm-hmm. Then some games he played as a left winger and he did amazing because he has this capacity 1v1 and then he can cross with great quality. So basically in the way we are playing right now, we see him more as a second striker. But once again, depending on the moment, then we can drop Eva, we can use another player as an 8, then use him as a number 10 to play with Alex as a second striker, or Alex as a number 10 and Kuzka as a second striker. It depends a little bit about those details. We see, for instance, Kuzka is left-footed. We want in that game to come inside, so he comes as a second striker a little bit from the right side inside, or we want him to come more from the left side as a number 10. It's those details that we try to analyze.
Lucas Andersen is out injured, unfortunately. But if he was available, where would you play him if you had a game tomorrow and he could play?
He can play wherever he wants.
No, very free role.
He's a special player, and in my eyes, I'm very sad that he had this injury. Yeah. But he's doing so well. He's working really hard, and I'm sure that we're gonna see even a stronger version of him because he's very committed into it. But obviously, for me, when I see a Lucas, for me, I see a number 10 that has been playing many years of his career as a kind of false left winger. Yeah. But I don't know. I remember Ronaldinho. He was a number 10. Or Neymar, he's a number 10 playing by accident a little bit on the left because they like to come inside. Or Messi's a number 10 that has been playing many years on the right side. But for me, Lucas is this kind of number 10. He could play as a second striker because what I said, it's a little bit similar interpretation. But it was clear already last season when he played the four games he could play with us that he can make a difference in this league. So looking forward.
The last subject is the players. I've been very impressed with the way you have used different players with different abilities to change the game. Mm-hmm. For example, you have often brought in Anders Helsker, if we were talking about, for Mathias Ross after 60 minutes or so. Is that something you work on in training, or is it just about pointing out the strength of the players and then say, I see the game's developing this way, now we need to bring in Anders Helsker, for example?
I think that the starting point is that I have good players, and then it's easy because I look at the bench and then I feel that I have possibilities, and that's credit for the guys, of course, because they are good players, credit for the club, for Inge, that has done a good job in the window. So in that sense, this is the starting point. And then the second part is, as I said before, the culture that we try to build, where we want everybody to feel that they are important. Doesn't matter if they start the game or not. And I know that it sounds easy. I know that everybody wants the same. But I think that we're building that kind of environment. Of course, I like when players, if they are not starting, they are disappointed and they are pissed off. That's the way it must be, because they need to be ambitious. But I think we have a group of players that they know that we count on them as long as they deliver during the week. And then everybody's important. So sometimes someone is important 30 minutes, sometimes important 60 or 90. But for instance, this one that you mentioned, we know that Matthias is very good in certain points of the game. He's developing amazingly in others. Yeah. And then we knew that Anders is very good in some parts of the game. So for instance, in some games where we felt that we could add some extra factor on the ball, because Anders is very good in breaking lines, is very good into the long passing. That has been a tool for us. To even be more aggressive on the build-up, to be more aggressive into breaking lines, or to connect with the last line or three tone behind. All the credit for him. And for the rest of players, we have been using the same, I don't know, with Kusk against Viborg, he comes in, he scores a goal in the first ball he touched. Of course, this is not about the coach, this is about the player, he's good. But we try to understand what is the game scenario, and then, okay, what can improve the game possibility. I don't know, Magnus, for instance, has been really good in many games, coming as well as a sub and then doing really 20, 30 minutes for the team when the team needed perhaps to play with Pedro and him together. That, on my eyes, are more two number six. So, okay, but at that moment we thought that could give us an edge, and they have done amazing.
Is it something you consider during the week that you maybe discuss with your colleagues? This match, we expected to develop this way, and then it can actually be an advantage to have a player that maybe he should start, but they know he's going to be much more valuable for us the last 30 minutes or so.
Definitely. I think that when we organize the week, when we design how the week will be, we take into account, I would say, 3 points. The first one is how are we doing? How is our team looking? What are the parts that we need to reinforce, to work more, to develop? The second point is, of course, who we're going to play against. Yeah. So we spend some time on the game plan. We spend some time. And especially, I need to mention that on the game plan, we always try to look at, okay, what are the things that we can, how we can really hurt them. Yeah. More than not, okay, they're extremely good here. Of course, we care about the defensive power, where they are good at. But I want to look more into what are the weaknesses of the opponent to work that during the week, that not the opposite, to prevent. And then the last part is about building on the individual, building on the okay, where in the season we are, we want to develop more this player. And then in this mix is when I spend some time with the staff. So we analyze together the opponent. I usually watch 2, 3, 4 games, full games, plus what I get from the analyst. And then I close in my room, and then I start to make some things, then I share with the coaches. And then in some way the target is to try to think, and this is not easy, how the game will be, how the game can develop. Yeah. And then is when I think it's too much to say that you have a plan, but you have some thoughts about, okay, that can be a possibility. Or Tim Pritchard coming in that minute, it can be more important that perhaps him is standing or the opposite, or and so on. So this is something that we try to do. Yes, but we are not always right.
So the dream or the target is to have such a distinct playing style that you can change the expression of the game with the players and say they totally know what to do in every situation, so it doesn't matter who plays to me.
Yes, but I would say more from understanding of the game point of view than not from a it looks like robots, they know what.
Yeah.
No, I want the players to play with freedom.
To understand the game.
That's it. Yeah. And then sometimes to understand the game means that, okay, it's important to be wider in certain areas or be more narrow.
Yeah.
These kind of things. Yeah. And in the moment that they understand that by themselves, and I think they are doing that so well, then it's perfect. Because you know how it is when you play in front of 20,000-30,000. Yeah. We as a coaches can scream whatever we want, but it's very difficult to connect with the players. So it's them. The game belongs to them.
Nagelsmann, Julian Nagelsmann, he's talking about the maybe it can be a possibility to have a headset on the player so he can coach the players in every situation. But
I really admire Nagelsmann, but here we will never agree, because I really want the players to have always the freedom to decide by themselves, always.
I totally agree. Mati, it has been a very good start of the season. You're number three right now, only 3 points behind FC Copenhagen. What are the goals this season? Are you looking at the championship or
win against AGF? That's all.
That's the first goal.
That's the first, and I would say that almost the unique. And I know that it can sound like a boring answer, but that has been the approach since we start. Yeah. We had a lot of talks last season when I arrived. It was a big issue, the top six, and then at some moment I said, "Look, the way I see the development in the long term of the club, of the team, for me is not a matter of life if we get the top six or not." And I was very criticized. But instead, we were closer than ever in the last 7 years to Europe that it has been the club in these 7 years. So my point is that now we need to go game by game. And then in April, we sit all together and we say, okay, where we are? It's top six, it's not, it's top three, it's where we are. And then the last, for me, the important thing is to arrive to the last month with chances to achieve something. That's where I would like to be. And to do that, I can only see that we need to win AGF. And then next, I don't even know. If you ask me, I don't remember who we play against after AGF.
Mati Cifuentes, it has been a huge pleasure talking to you. Are we missing something, or did you get to say what you wanted?
Absolutely. You gave me a lot of time to explain, to talk a lot. So, I really appreciate the visit. Thank you very much for your time, and it has been a pleasure.
Thank you, and all the best in the future, and good luck against AGF, as you were talking about on Monday.
Tak.
And now I'm gonna switch to Danish. Det her var det taktiske værksted med Mati Cifuentes. Tak til Arbejdernes Landsbank, Audi og Old Irish Pop, der er partner på denne udsendelse, og som sammen med dig, der lytter, gør det muligt for mig at lave det taktiske værksted. Så selvfølgelig også en kæmpe tak til dig for at lytte med. Mit navn er Rasmus Monnerup. Det her var det taktiske værksted. Vi høres ved.
Udsendelsen, du lige har hørt, er produceret af Mediano Media og lavet i samarbejde med Old Irish Pop og Audi. Og som altid, når vi snakker dansk fodbold, Arbejdernes Landsbank. Tak fordi du lyttede med.